Here's Ray Ferraro on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. This is a pretty strong take you just heard me drop there, Ray. What do you make of it?
Oh, I wasn't listening.
Oh, okay.
No, I was. You're right. Boston isn't going to roll away like they are right now. And look what's happened to Tampa in the last couple of weeks or 10 days. Gee, maybe link that to Victor Hedman being out of the lineup. That probably hurts a little bit. There's so much that's going to change between now and April. Who's going to be hot then? Who's going to be healthy then? Which has nothing to do with what's going on now. And I would say the only thing to be worried about is if you think the way that they're playing now, for the most part, is all that they're capable of. And I would think nobody thinks that. Like, I would think most people think, well, there's at least another gear or two, or maybe in some cases three, that these guys have, as opposed to the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, I think that's very fair, and this isn't a jab at the Bruins. They're on fire. They just beat up on Montreal again on Saturday night.
Yeah,
but this is as good as it gets for them. Like, at some point, they're probably going to come closer to the median here, where the Leafs, over the past month and a half, have been at the bottom end of the way they can play. Like, their numbers and their game just have not been that strong, where we have seen better stretches from them. And I believe collectively they can all play better, and we're still talking 30-plus games for them to reach that kind of level. That's a long time.
Well, I mean, there's from every aspect, the Bruins have been just smoking along. Like, remember at the start of the year when Tuukka Rask couldn't stop a beach ball?
Awful.
And he was terrible, and Anton Khudobin took over the net.
Yeah.
Well, I think, I want to say Rask has a 15-game point streak going right now. His goals against average is under 2. There's not a better line in the league than Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak.
Ray, do you think Bergeron could maybe win a Hart Trophy this year?
You know, I wouldn't have said so a month ago because the gap that the Tampa guys had was so far. But now all of a sudden, look at the numbers he's got. Look at his impact. You've got to throw Nate MacKinnon into this now, too.
Mm-hmm.
Out of left field, Colorado's, you know, what have they got, 9 in a row as they come in tonight into Toronto? I mean, it's like it's astounding. So I would say that's probably is. I wouldn't say that's improbable. If they, of course, they got to continue to bolt along as they're going right now, and we, you know, it would be hard for them to play at this pace. The number of goals that line has, like both Pastrnak and Marchand have 20, but I want to say that they've got something crazy like 16 goals in 12 games or something. Like, it's just remarkable what that line has done. They just tug that team along, yet anywhere on that lineup, they can hurt you, which was not the case a couple of years ago. And now, of course, they're going to have to deal without Charlie McAvoy being in the lineup at least a couple of weeks with this procedure he's got to get done.
We were talking about it off air, Ray. It sounds, I mean, in text, it doesn't sound great, but it's kind of scary. You know, like it's you got a young defenseman, and anything to do with the heart is very scary. We're talking about Rich Peverly. We're talking about Craig Cunningham.
It's not that. It's not that. And the reason I know this is my oldest son, who's now 30, or will be this June. He had an ablation when he was 17, and he was training in the summer to go play Junior A, and he wasn't feeling right. And took him to a doctor, took him to another one, went to another one, and eventually came up that he had he needed to get this ablation because something wasn't quite working right. And he had one, and within a couple of weeks, he was back on the ice. And
he was fine.
He was fine. But it's funny. So I say it like that, except you're right, Noodles. It is your heart, right? So like you, even though the doctors will, I'm sure, have told him and will tell him, look, this is not as big a deal as it sounds, it's still your heart.
Right.
And it's, just hope that he's okay. I mean, that's a brutal, brutal curveball to him, that's for sure.
Yeah, it reads tough. Charlie McAvoy underwent a successful procedure today to treat an abnormal heart rhythm.
Yeah, that's
like,
where you're
that
right,
sounds
right.
Like, okay, maybe we'll see you next season, but they're saying only a couple of weeks, and he'd be up for the rookie of the year.
That literally would be an outpatient. Like, he would literally go in, he's probably at home. Or maybe he stays overnight and gets monitored overnight. But, I mean, it's not a... it's really crazy, actually, when you think about it. I'm talking about it, I'm like, it sounds even crazy. He's going to... He'll be out either today or tomorrow, guaranteed. It's not like he's in for a significant period of time.
Well, it's good to know because, when you talk about anything to do with the heart, you're always a little bit nervous. For example, guys have knee surgery all the time where they go in and scope and just clean up a little bit of scar tissue. But when you use the word knee injury to anybody, especially in hockey, You're always wondering, well, what grade is it? What's going on? Are you ever going to feel 100%? Where a lot of these procedures are like you say, outpatient situations, and the guy's home a little bit later that day.
No matter how they read, and I'm in Minnesota, and Noodles, we do all these Senator games, and you got for the people that don't see the Senators a lot, they saw them against the Leafs this weekend. Carlson doesn't look right.
Right.
You got beat a couple of games in the Toronto game, and you're like, man, even though it was a successful surgery and things were, they said everything went as well as it could, he doesn't look the same.
Do you ever just say that he's not playing well, Ray, or are we always going to just say he's such a talent that there's something wrong? Is it just that he's not playing well?
I think there's some of that, for sure. I mean, I don't think there's any question his play is bogged down with the rest of this mess that's around Ottawa right now. Who's staying, who's going, what are the trades, what's the general manager going to say now, all that stuff. We've been in places, guys, where all of a sudden it feels like you're carrying a bowling ball around with you, and he's playing 26 minutes a night. But I don't see, when I hear this, if he's a free agent, he's not going to sign in Ottawa, or, I could see a team trading for him, I'd be really nervous trading for him, quite frankly, and giving him an eight-year deal when he's skating like this.
Well,
I'd be really nervous.
I'm like,
what if this is the new normal?
What if one of the things I love about the guy, which also I watched the games and I wonder, is he loves life, he loves hockey, he's always got a smile on his face. But then when I see some plays where he just gets beat and he just looks like he's goofing around, I'm like, that's the element I don't like about it.
It almost looks, though, doesn't it, that he's just beaten. Like, he's just like, nah, guy got by me.
Nylander went around him on Saturday night. That was honestly Brad Marsh trying to turn and catch a guy.
Brad Marsh.
It was really strange.
It was awful looking, yeah.
That was on a power play.
Flat footed. Yeah.
You have to be thinking defense, and Nylander went around him in two steps and was gone.
It doesn't look right. And so to the point, we always see these guys get surgery, and I know there was a point when I came out of surgery, I don't know, four or something, or, with my knee, and I'm like, I'm not the same anymore. Like, it's a bad thing to have run through your head when I'm skating, and I'm like, I can't push out of a turn like I used to. And maybe that's what he's dealing with, because it doesn't look the same. Like, I've done enough games of his this year where, usually you can remember like six or seven rushes where you literally come up on your toes when you're watching them. You're like, whoa, that's so awesome. And there's been none of those.
No, there hasn't.
And I'd be concerned, man. I would be if I were Ottawa.
Well, do you think that the surgery and then him doing nothing in the off season too, do you think he needs a good, unfortunately, if this season's a wash, he needs a good off season of strengthening and retraining it a little bit? Because it's like jumping on a moving train, and yes, he plays so much, and he's good enough to just get by. And if this is his worst, and he's still, he gets beat by Nylander. Every great defenseman gets beat, if this is his worst, I think an off season of rest, they're not going to make the playoffs, so he's going to have 5 months to rehab it and kind of get back to a point where next season he'll be fine. But you're right. You just said something, Ray, that struck a chord. What if this is the new normal? Like, if it just doesn't recover all the way to where he's 100% comfortable, that would be concerning.
It would be, because then, you're trying to, you would have to get the vision of the brilliant Carlson out of your head, if that's the case. But as you're talking about training, he would have spent all summer rehabbing, not training. They're two different things. Two completely different things.
Right.
If you remember, we saw a bunch of footage of him. He still had that that scooter sort of thing that he was pushing around with his good leg and his bad leg was up on the scooter.
Same
that
thing as into, the foot had.
Yeah, like he was on that forever. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get back training and you're trying to rebuild your leg strength and you're trying to rebuild your core. None of that's hockey exercise. That's just trying to get your strength back. And so he would have been way behind. Then don't forget, he wasn't ready to start camp. And so, you know, we started before he was ready anyway. So his year, we probably, you know, looking back, we probably should have been ready for a lot of this with him.
Yeah.
That it just wasn't going to be for him, because as an unbelievable athlete as he is, and he's an incredible athlete, really is, sometimes you just, you know, you're not that incredible. You know, you're still human. You still got to go through the same things everybody else does. And he doesn't look anywhere near the same. Too much went right for the Senators last year. Like, everything went right for them. Now it looks like everything goes wrong for them. They lose Stone tonight. He's out. You know, so they're, you know, I mean, they're limping around here like a wounded dog right now.
So how about the 80s version of Erik Karlsson returning to Edmonton, and that being Paul Coffey, named the skills development coach over the weekend, whatever that is. And I don't know what he's been doing. I think he's been living in Toronto and coaching minor hockey in the GTHL. He's a great player. He's one of the great players of all time. But optically, I can't get past this is another Oiler move where they're bringing in the old guys. For what?
I think I spent a lot of time with Paul. I was his teammate for parts of three seasons. And I understand what you're saying. It's like, why is he qualified as opposed to some guy that's been through the ranks and gutting it out, coaching junior, coaching in the NHL? But when you just knowing from conversations having with him, his understanding of the game, obviously he's not going to be going up to players and saying, well, when I played with Gretzky, he would turn up and do this. That's just not what you do.
Yeah.
These players, these modern-day players, they probably don't even identify what Paul actually was or is because it was so long ago. But his understanding of the game, the way he understands the mental grind, and I like the move.
Yeah,
but I understand where other people would say, why is it a former Oiler? Everybody at Edmonton's like, why another former Oiler?
The old boys
well,
club.
I would say the difference, would be with what they've, you know, apparently what Coffey's doing now compared to what some of the other guys had done in the past is those guys literally came from non-hockey jobs into significant hockey jobs. You know, Wayne Gretzky'd never coached anywhere. And then he's the coach of the Coyotes. And Kevin Lowe had never been a manager. Then he's the general manager after being a successful coach. Mac T was a really good coach. And then all of a sudden, he's a general manager. He'd never been a manager before. They're not asking, I don't think, Coffey to be on the bench. They're not asking him to run the power play. They're not asking him, you know, they're asking him to help with the development part. Now, every development guy I run into, I'm like, how's it going? They're like, well, yeah, man, I travel a lot. You know, you got to get to all the prospects. You got to get to all the minor league teams. And I don't know, is that what he wants to do? Because that's what the real development coaches are doing.
Yeah.
Now, if he's just working with the Oilers, that's one thing. Or just going down to Bakersfield, and that's another thing. But the development guys, like, you know, you mentioned Rich Peverly earlier, Noodles. I ran into him in London for one of the World Junior exhibition games. And I said, how are you, you know, we're just talking. And he's like, yeah, I'm all over the place. I got to build my schedule, but I got to build my schedule to see every prospect we have.
I agree.
It's a pretty daunting job. And if he wants to do it, good for him. And there's lots to learn from him, I'm sure. But it's not an easy job.
I think it's different, though, with Coffey. You're right. Like the Rich Peverly, Scotty Nickel does it. You know, I know a lot of guys who do it at that level. Scott Pellerin, actually, former teammate of mine, does it for the Leafs. But
right.
You look at it, Anaheim has Scott Niedermayer kicking around. Like, now, Niedermayer works as much as he wants to. Larry Robinson is a guy who is coveted by a lot of teams. And St. Louis has him right now, I believe. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's great to have somebody with that type of cachet that can be another set of eyes to help out. If anything, you're right. Optically, it looks bad because what Edmonton has done in the past hasn't worked. And Hayes, that's where I think you're coming from. It hasn't worked. You got another guy, the old boys club. But I think it's good to have. And if you look at, you know, the Maple Leafs organization has Jacques Lemaire on staff, Jacques Caron. Like, it's just money Like it's
if that's what it is, that hey, you can come in and chime in and help out, and if you want to be here, be
here and help out.
That's fine. You got all the money in the world. I just like to know the chain of command. How this came about? Was this Todd McClellan saying I could use help?
Maybe
is it Shirelli? Was it Gretzky who came down and said I was just talking to Koff and he'd like to be a part of it? So now he's a part of it.
Regardless of who Wayne Gretzky is, I think this would have to go down the chain.
Probably.
If Todd McClellan is going to be your coach, it would have to go through him, wouldn't it?
I would think.
But the big thing is...
Maybe at the bottom of the chain, it's Todd.
If it's at the top and it's Kate saying, coffee's coming in, then nobody has a say in anything.
Yeah, that's...
Or it starts one below and that's Gretz.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Kate's son with the big hair.
It started somewhere, right? Somebody decided, hey, we need another coach. I'd been hearing that a little bit from the last time I was out there, like right around the tail end of November, that they were talking about adding another coach or another eye in the sky. And you know, and then I didn't hear anything for a while. And, you know, I mean, let's be honest. Those guys, they're pretty loyal to each other. And if he wanted to do it, it wouldn't take too many calls to set the ball in motion.
Well, plus the owner's a super fan. That's the truth. Right.
Well, that's my standpoint. Exactly. This has nothing to do with Paul Coffey and what he can do or can't do. Paul Coffey's resume speaks for itself.
Yeah, exactly. He's Paul Coffey.
Right. But for the longest time, Kevin Lowe's been a part of the organization, and they were a disaster forever, and it was like, well, he's sticking around, and McTavish came back. And
they,
now,
they didn't fire them. They just moved him to the side.
Just moved them around. And, you know, Gretzky, I don't really know what Gretzky's title is or what he does. He's like Wayne Gretzky. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
You'd be Wayne Gretzky.
It's fine. I just... You know, it's weird how they've gotten back to a position where you're like, what's up with Edmonton?
Well, here's something I'll throw out. Take a look at some of the organizations throughout the NHL. And either that have owners that either have deep pockets or are not shy to make committees now. I'll come back to St. Louis. Look at St. Louis's staff under Doug Armstrong. There's Marty Brodeur, Al MacInnis, Larry Robinson. Like, these are Hall of Fame people kicking around. Brett Hull was in the organization. Like, they've got some former players, but good hockey minds kicking around. The Toronto Maple Leafs, I just talked about. Mike Babcock, he can call Jacques Lemaire. Jacques Lemaire is in my opinion, one of the greatest coaches who ever coached the game. If he doesn't like what he sees, maybe he calls Jacques and says, you know what are you seeing? Like, there's good organizations start to surround themselves with good hockey people, but you have to have the resources to do that. All you hear in, for example, in Ottawa, Eugene Melnyk is they've got what they've got, and they don't, you know, they're working on a budget. You know, you go right through the league. I don't think Florida's doing that, although they did bring in Chris Pronger to work with Talon. So I think it's not just one guy now. You're seeing committees throughout the league, and if Edmonton does it, if it works out, I'd like to see Coffey work with guys like Darnell Nurse to let him know when to jump into the play. Like, to me, Nurse still needs some decision-making process back there. Klefbom, same thing. Hopefully it helps him. It can't get worse.
Hey, listen,
right now,
by all means, I'm not against Edmonton or whatever. They got a problem on their hands they're going to try to fix.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how, like, when McDavid got there, we talked a lot about how that really changes the sales pitch league-wide. When you get to July 1, you start selling players on the idea of them being either line mates or teammates with McDavid. I'd be curious to find out how this season affects the sales pitch. Like, if you're going into July 1, yeah, you got McDavid, but you finished fourth last in the league. Like, how are they going to sell McDavid when the team outside of McDavid just isn't good enough right now?
Oh, and by the way, our cap is really only $60 million because we gave 20 to two guys.
Right. We don't have that much money for you either. Like, that it's not. It's going to be tough sledding out there.
They quickly became a story that I don't think many people thought they were going to be this year. And this is just another, you know, a little grenade that comes into the middle of it to stir the pot again.
Well, we'll see. Where are you tonight? Minnesota?
I'm in Minnesota. There's a blizzard. I'm staying across the street from the arena. I can almost see the arena. But in between where I am and the rink is this giant ice sculpture that they're putting up for the Super Bowl. And when Gord and I were walking over this morning, Gord says, how long do you think that's going to be before a bunch of Philadelphia crazies climb up on top of that?
Oh, get ready.
This thing over.
Chainsaw to it.
Get ready for it. Because, hey, listen, Boston people aren't much behind them.
You guys... Tell me you guys saw that Philly guy run into the pole.
Yeah.
Yes.
On the subway?
On the train.
Oh. I didn't know what I was, you know, when you're watching something and you don't know what the payoff is. Saravelli sent that to me and I was watching it and I'm like, well, why am I looking at the inside? Oh man, that had to hurt.
That was a payoff.
Yeah.
That was outstanding.
Pay dirt.
Right, how man, about those meatheads throwing full cans of beer?
Well, we were talking about that. Like, Philly's got that reputation, and O was saying it's league-wide. People throughout the NFL, fans are crazy when it comes to tailgating and boozing, but in Philly, they're lunatics. Like, they're crazy, and this is victim-shaming, but I think you're crazy to wear the opponent's jersey around the stadium. You know it's coming. The reputation is not hidden. You know these people are yeah.
Not hidden. When they built the new stadium, they have holding cells underneath it.
Right. That get filled up by the end of the first quarter.
Like, but just think, so some meathead throws a beer can. Of course, it can hit anybody.
Yeah.
Right? Like how stupid, well, how liquored are these people to think that's, hey, this is all we're going to show them?
That's the answer.
A football game, man.
Like, I know. It's yeah. crazy. It's before the game, too. It's not like your team just lost and your emotions are out of control. Even then, you can't condone it. It's not acceptable. But this is 2 hours before kickoff you're acting like this. It's lunacy.
Oh, yeah. My coach was much better.
I'm with you.
Much safer.
Yeah.
All right, man. Enjoy it tonight.
Later. We'll talk to you tomorrow, boys.
There's Ray Ferraro on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. For fast approvals and competitive payment options on heavy equipment from any dealer, visit ValiantFinancial.ca.